Did you see the picture at coasttocoastam.com of the baby goat born with a human face in Malaysia? Unbelievable. What's happening there? That is just so weird. In a moment, David Wellington back with us on Coast to Coast. We'll talk about his latest work, the Cyclops Initiative, about secret government experiments, and also his past book when he was on with me a couple years ago, Chimera. That could be what we're talking about with this baby goat born with a human face. So stand by for all of that next on Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to Coast. David Wellington attended Syracuse University. He got his initial degree in creative writing from Penn State. He is a researcher, author of horror, fantasy, and thriller novels as well. In 2004, he began serializing his horror fiction online, posting chapters of a novel three times a week on a friend's blog as well. David's with us now on Coast to Coast. Good to have you back, David.
Well, thanks. It's great to be back.
So we've got this picture. Got a lot to talk with you about, but when we were on and we talked about Chimera, the mixing of human and animal parts, my gosh, there's a picture that we've got up. I don't know if you've seen this yet. But
I just looked at it on your website.
What do you think of that? I mean, this baby goat born with a human-looking face, is that just an anomaly or what?
You know, there are things out there in nature that we have not even discovered yet. There are things happening all the time that science, you know, modern science has not yet described. Who knows where this came from, but it is a really startling picture.
It really is. I don't even want to go there in terms of the possibilities of what could have created something like this, but I would guess any possibility is possible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big world out there, and the universe beyond our world is even bigger. You know, anything truly is possible.
You know, when you wrote the book Chimera, tell me what got you to do that.
That was a book that I actually worked on it for about 5 years. I started doing the research, and I couldn't stop. It was a real eye-opener to learn, what the government was doing to people, you know, behind closed doors, but also just what can happen when you start mixing different kinds of DNA in the same organism. It is a Google search that I do not recommend.
No, it's kind of gruesome.
Yeah, you don't want to see all those pictures, honestly. But it became just a fascinating subject to me, just, you know, how even human DNA and animal DNA could be combined in what we call a transgenic organism.
A friend of mine several years ago had to go and get a pig's valve and a cow's aorta installed in his body. Now, does that make him a chimera?
No, because the DNA in those organs is not mixing with his human DNA. It's still pretty freaky.
It is freaky.
I'll admit it. It is very strange. But I gotta say, you know, if I had a heart problem, and I needed animal parts to save my life,
go for it.
I think I'd go for it.
What about growing human ears on the back of a mouse?
That is a little harder to defend. that particular experiment, you know, I think that they really were trying to do something positive for humanity with that, but it's very hard to get to that point and not just be, you know, a little concerned about what our scientists are doing in their labs.
I mean, is it conceivable to create a human being that is almost half animal? Eventually.
I don't think we're at that point yet. And I don't think we need to worry about that happening, you know, in the next few decades.
See, I think they'll do it. They'll do it just to see what it looks like.
Well, maybe not just to see what it looks like, but there will be some good reason. There's always a good reason, right? There was a great reason to build an atomic bomb. And then we had 50 years of worrying about that. You know, there's a great reason for us to be doing experiments in, like, biological warfare. You know, the Army absolutely needed that, right? That's what they said. And so we spent a lot of money working on that, and that's just a terrifying prospect if any of that stuff got loose.
Now, your new work is called the Cyclops Initiative. Tell us about that.
Black Ops Initiative, it's a novel. I want to stress that. It's not a true story.
But is it based on fact?
It's based on a lot of research I did about drones and robots and where the military is heading with these things. And it is a story about what could happen if some terrorists got a hold of our current drone technology, you know, like the Predator drone and things like that. And just how easy it would be to bring America to a standstill if you had that kind of technology. And fortunately, as far as we know, none of our enemies have it yet. And we're certainly working on ways to make sure that they don't. And we are working on ways to be able to fight back if that were to happen. But right now, somebody with access to our Predator drones could, you know, destroy the electric grid, they could knock out our water supply, and they could do it pretty much overnight.
They might even be able to do this without access to our own drones. They may fly their own in.
Sure. I mean, you can go out right now, and for $100, you can buy one of those quadcopter drones.
That's right.
That does not come with Hellfire missiles.
No. And a little too small to lift one, I would think.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. But those things are pretty dangerous, too, in their own right. They can be used to spy on people, and you would never even know it was there.
We just had a story of a American couple that pledged allegiance to ISIS, and they got killed in a drone in the Middle East. These things are pretty darn sophisticated now, aren't they?
They really are. We have spent billions of dollars building these things and making them kind of the ultimate killing machine. They are absolutely silent when you're on the ground. You can't hear them coming. You might see a little speck in the sky, but by that point, it's too late. And once the Hellfire missile is launched, it hits the target within seconds. There's no getting away from it. And it's pretty devastating. A Hellfire missile can blow up an SUV and just leave bits of metal around.
So are you saying a drone is a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, like any technology, it can be both. Drones do actually have useful applications. They can be very useful in disaster situations where you need to locate people, but say you can't, you know, if the roads are washed out, say in a flood, and you need to find where people are. You can send in drones. You don't worry too much if they get destroyed, right? Because there's nobody on this drone. But that drone can find people who are on the roof of a church in the middle of a flood. And then we can know where to send boats. We can know where to send helicopters. So the drones do definitely have a good side. You know, anything we build has the capacity to do good. But it also has the capacity to do evil. And fortunately, as we've seen time and time again through history, once we have a new technology, the first thing we do with it is find a way to kill people with it.
Well, there's no question about that. And what do we do if our enemies create drones by the thousands and use them against us?
You know, we have some safeguards in place against that right now. I don't know if they would really be up to the task, but for instance, right now there is a blimp that flies over Washington, D.C. that is just there to look for drones. It is there to keep drones away from the White House, from the Capitol building, and so on. And it does, you know, it's got very sensitive, very high-tech equipment on board. You know, but again, this is, you've got somebody flying that blimp, and they're looking for those drones. And even if they miss a couple of them, it could be a real disaster.
They're going to continue using drones, David, and I fear they're going to use a lot of drones here on our own land, over our own land. Police departments, you name it, they're going to have it. Spy drones, law enforcement drones, they're going to be all over the place.
Yeah, I hate to tell you, but that's already here. That's a very real thing that's going on right now. After the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, we saw a lot of military equipment came home and was turned over to police forces. The really high-tech stuff like drones kind of went to the big government agencies. And in fact, the border patrols, the border security forces, have just hundreds of Predator drones. that they are using right now to look for people trying to cross our borders illegally, whether that's, you know, for whatever reason, whether that's drugs or something else. And they have drones going over the borders of Mexico and Canada 24 hours a day looking for this sort of
thing. How big are these drones? What do they look like?
Oh, these are, you know, retired Predator drones. These are the classic drone that everybody thinks of when they see one.
Pretty good size.
Yeah, they're smaller and quieter is the thing. They're a lot quieter than a helicopter.
What's the benefit of a drone?
Well, you know, for one thing, because it is quieter, you can send it into a situation where you say you're looking for somebody and you don't want them to know you're coming. A helicopter makes a lot of noise. And, you know, people know that they're being searched for when they see a helicopter. The drone can fly 10,000 feet up, way past anything you could see, and yet it can still get perfect high-definition video of the ground. That's what the Border Patrol is looking for. What the military wants with the drone is just this ability to send a plane up there. You don't have to worry about the pilot getting tired. You don't have to worry about the pilot not being able to see what they're looking for, because that drone has its eye on the ground the whole time. It can stay up there 12 hours. Some of them can stay 24 hours up in the air, just waiting for the right moment. And when that moment comes, they launch that missile, and it's all over. This is something that no helicopter can do. You know, this is not something that a pilot in an airplane can do. These drones are fulfilling missions that we've just never been able to do before with human pilots.
In your novel, what's the thrust of it?
Basically, it starts with a Predator drone, and this is actually one of those retired ones, so it doesn't have any missiles on it, but is used as a projectile and is launched at the port of New Orleans. Now, that is one of the busiest ports in the world. A lot of the consumer goods that we use every day, a lot of our food, a lot of our, you know, cars and medicines and everything else comes through that port every day. And there are only a couple of those ports around the country. If you can knock out one of those, say you hit something really sensitive and just make it so that it's not safe for people to go in there, even for 24 hours, you would see just a huge, huge hit to the economy, is one thing. And you would start to see food shortages. You would start to see people not being able to get the medicine they need. And so, you know, you would get to a point where people would be pretty upset with the government for letting this happen, obviously. And then if you hit another one the next day, and this is what happens in the book, you know, you hit another port, and then they knock out the power grid of California. Pretty soon, the people of America are going to start asking the really hard questions. You know, are they safe? And why is the government not doing enough to stop this? And so the book is really about terror in the true sense of not necessarily killing a lot of people, but in that sense of making people feel unsafe to the point where they just don't know what's going to happen next.
In the United Kingdom, they thought that a drone hit a plane. Now they think it was just a garbage bag that was floating around up there. But those collisions are going to happen, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. There are so many drones out there right now, and the number is increasing every day. There's no limit on how many drones we're going to have in 10 years, in 20 years. And yes, collisions with airplanes are going to happen. You know, some of these drones are going to malfunction and fall out of the sky, you know, and maybe they hit people on the way down. But, you know, even you'll have a drone-on-drone collision. And if we lose some of those drones that we actually count on, you know, if this is in the middle. The real concern, of course, is that you have drones, say, doing emergency work. Say they're tracking a forest fire, and you have a bunch of civilians send up their drones to go look at what's going on. It makes it that much harder for, you know, the firefighters to do their job.
How far do these drones go? What I mean, because they're battery operated, right?
Yeah, some of them are battery operated, some are still gasoline operated. They're definitely moving much more towards the battery operated ones, and they are making leaps and strides in that regard. Right now, the drones have, you know, a capability in the hundreds of miles. So you need to
hundreds of miles. Wow.
Yeah, you need to launch it from, say, the next country over, say, if you're in the Middle East or another state.
Now, you have to have somebody guiding it, right?
Yes, this is what drones are, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the difference between drones and robots, because robots are kind of even scarier. But drones are not able to think for themselves. They need a pilot somewhere operating them. Now, most of our military drones are actually controlled from a base in Nevada. Believe it or not, the drones that are carrying out strikes in Yemen and in Pakistan and Syria are actually being driven by a guy in an Air Force base in Nevada.
In real time, right?
In real time. It's all through satellites. So the drone sends the pictures back up to the satellite. The satellite sends it to Nevada. The operator in Nevada sends the command back the same way.
Remarkable technology. What companies make these?
Every aircraft manufacturer in the country is making these right now.
Because they're
all these guys. Every single one of them wants those contracts because the government is shelling out billions and billions of dollars for these things.
Do you ever foresee the day where a drone will fire a missile on U.S. soil against us?
I'll tell you, this has never happened. I pray it never will. However,
here's the caveat, right?
Yeah, it's not off the books. This is something. So we're basically looking at two presidents so far who have used drones, George W. Bush and Barack Obama. And both of them have set up guidelines for when and where drones can be used. Neither one of them has ever said they would not use a drone on American soil. In fact, when former Attorney General Eric Holder was asked this directly, point blank, he said he couldn't rule it out. He said that there was no legal limit on where a drone could be used, a predator drone.
Is there a privacy issue here?
There are tons of privacy issues. This is absolutely the end of privacy as we knew it. You know, these drones can go anywhere. And now, just talking about the commercial models that you can buy for $100 down at the drugstore, right? This thing could, fly outside your bedroom window, and you wouldn't know it was there.
With a camera.
With a camera.
Some guy wants to look at his neighbor lady or something like that.
Something like that. I mean, you can put a night vision camera on these things. You can put an infrared camera, so it could be pitch black outside.
And they're relatively silent, aren't they?
They're very, very quiet, and they're getting quieter all the time. And that of course, is a big issue. It's one of the things that the military loves about them, but it's also one of the things that makes them so ethically tricky for civilian use.
You can put little cameras on them in terms of the video, obviously. So you can basically have eyes on these drones.
You can put cameras on them. You can put microphones on them so you can hear what people are saying. What's really scary is, and believe it or not, there's an app for this. It is an app called Snoopy that allows you to use a drone to tie into somebody's Wi-Fi network. And while it can't necessarily hack directly into your computer, it can figure out what websites you're visiting. It can figure out, how often you're using your computer.
Through the drone?
Through a drone.
My God.
This is a real concern.
Just because of the app and the drone.
Yeah, and the app is basically free. The drone is $100. This is a real concern. One of the big worries that the banks have is that a drone is going to hover over you while you're putting your PIN number in at the ATM machine.
And watch you.
And watch you and record that PIN number.
But they need your card, don't they?
Sort of. There are ways around that, aren't there? This is the world we're living in now, where you call somebody up and you say, hey, I lost my ATM card. Can you ship me a new one? They're going to ask you a couple questions, and then they're going to say, what's your PIN number? And if you can tell them what the PIN number is and say where this person lives.
And then change the address. David, we're going to come back and talk more, because I really want to get into the robot end of this. Reminding all of you that want to go out to St. Louis on June 18th, a live stage show we'll be having. UFO expert Stanton Friedman will be our guest. Gary Patterson will be talking about the 27 Club and some other surprises for you. It'll be at the Lindenwood University Saturday, June 18th. So if you want any information, it's at coasttocoastam.com. Under our highlight reel, you just click that, scroll down, and look for the tickets. And I'm looking forward to that. We're going to have some fun. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. David Wellington with us. David, let's talk about robots and where we're going in that direction, because, I mean, no matter where you go, what you do, robots are everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. They make our cars. They vacuum our floors, right?
They're driving our cars.
Yep, that's the future, is the self-driven, self-driving cars. And that is definitely a kind of robot. We talked earlier about drones, and I want to, identify the difference between a drone and a robot. A drone, again, we talked about how you need an operator, someone who's looking through a camera, to tell the drone where to go, what to do. Robots make their own decisions. You see this with the self-driving cars especially. That car is not consulting somebody at AAA. When it's driving you someplace, that car is making its own decisions about where to go, how to get there, how fast, how to avoid collisions, all those things. And that is some really amazing stuff that computers can do now, to the point where we would actually trust them to drive for us. Now, in the 21st century, we are going to see that kind of technology taken to every possible extreme. We're going to get robots that come and clean our houses for us, robots that do a lot of menial jobs for us. People are even talking about robots writing books, which is what got me scared.
Or living with robots, literally.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll have a robot in your home in 50 years who will do just everything you would do normally. It'll cook your dinner. It'll, shine your shoes and do your laundry.
It'll replace your girlfriend or boyfriend.
Well, that's a definite possibility. That gets a little that material gets a little risque.
It's really unbelievable what's happening.
Yeah, it totally is. I think the 21st century, the 19th century was the Industrial Revolution. The 20th century was the Electronic Revolution. The 21st century is definitely going to be the robotic revolution.
What about robots, though, that are going to turn on us, like in warfare?
I don't know that the robots will ever, become smart enough to turn on us en masse and take over. I don't know whether we'll let them get that smart. If we do, it would be a terrible mistake. But in the near future, what we can really predict is that robots will be fighting our wars for us. And this is it's in some real scary territory. Right now the drones are fighting our wars for us. They really are. They are carrying out these anti-terrorist activities for us.
But you also need to be on the ground.
Yes, we need people on the ground. Well, what if we could replace those people with robots? The Pentagon, the military, has been spending billions of dollars on this. They'll give a grant to just about anybody who can come up with a way to do this. There are right now some robots so scary that I couldn't believe it when I wrote about them. They're working on a thing right now called the ARSS. And the ARSS, and I'm looking at what it stands for right here, but it's the Autonomous Rotorcraft Sniper System. That sounds pretty scary on its own, right? This is a sniper rifle that is mounted on a little toy helicopter. And this thing, it's not a drone. There's nobody in Nevada controlling this thing. This thing is a robot. It makes its own decisions, and it decides who it's going to shoot. They are building this thing right now. They're testing it. They're going to put it out overseas within the next 10 years, say. And this is going to be, it's going to make a Predator drone look like an old-fashioned toaster. This thing can fly for 100 miles, say, on battery power, so it's almost silent. It can creep up on you, and from a mile away, it can shoot you with perfect precision. And at no point does a human being have to make a decision.
Jeez. Now, at what point does this thing go awry and turn on us?
You know, some people will say that's already happening. Some people will say that this technology is already, you know, sort of seducing us over to the dark side because it's so easy. It's so easy to use, and there are so few consequences for us, right? We can put these robots on the battlefield. If they get blown up, who cares, right? We make more robots. We build more robots every day. But the people on the ground there who are looking at these robots coming toward them, you know, those are human lives.
Yeah, sure are.
And it becomes a real nightmare situation where we have the ability to just push a button somewhere in America, forget about it, never think about it again. The robots go into a village somewhere, they're looking for a terrorist. The robots don't care who they're going to hurt to find that terrorist. They don't, there's at no point are they thinking of themselves, am I doing the right thing? They are following a program. And they will follow that program to its inevitable conclusion.
Tell us about the big dog and Atlas robot programs. What are they?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to talk about these because I think some of your listeners may have actually seen video of these on the Internet. They've been very, very popular with the Internet crowd. The big dog was a system that they called it a dog, but it looks more like a horse with no head. And it is a robot that can walk over any terrain. I've seen it, seen videos of this thing going through snow, going through a river, going up the side of a mountain. This thing can walk over any terrain. It can walk faster than a human being, and it can carry hundreds of pounds of gear.
Jeez. Does it run or just walk?
It runs not. It doesn't. You know, it's not going to run as fast as a horse yet, but it runs faster than a human being, definitely. And this thing, it's huge, and it's scary to watch these videos because it makes this horrible noise as it walks. It makes this, like, screaming sound as it walks. The motor is inside of it going on. But the really scary bit about it is you see these videos, when they're testing these things, a guy will come along with a baseball bat, knock one of these things over on its back. The thing can...
It writes itself.
It rights itself, gets back up on all four legs, goes back to its mission. I was blown away when I saw that. That's incredible technology, and it's going to the military. Now, the big dog, it turned out, was too noisy. The military didn't like it because you could hear it coming from a mile away.
You mean grinding sounds and things like that?
Yeah, it's a screaming sound. It's a really creepy sound when you hear it. It's endless.
It's ridiculing you or something.
Yeah, maybe. But so they've kind of moved on to this new program, the Atlas program. Now, this is getting a lot of press. The Atlas robot is 6 feet tall. It has two legs, two arms, two hands. It looks like a human being in a spacesuit. It looks just like a human being. And it can do anything a human being can do. This is brand new technology. This is just total, off the charts, amazing technology. This thing can climb a ladder. It can, you know, it can run up and down stairs. It can, and again, you know, if it gets knocked over, it gets right back up and goes back on its mission. You know, the military is paying just millions upon millions of dollars of grants for these things, and our scientists are responding. They're coming up with just innovations every day to make these things more useful and more deadly.
What scares you about this, David?
What scares me about it is that we will stop taking war seriously. I think that is the thing that really, you know, there are a lot of nightmare situations, but I think that the really scary one is that it's too easy, that we will turn war over to these robots and not worry about it anymore. You know, right now, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan were just so horrible in terms of watching our soldiers come home missing legs, missing arms. We won't have to worry about that anymore. Because if a robot loses a leg, you just solder on a new one.
Yep, that's right.
Lose an arm, you screw a new one in the socket. And if it gets blown up completely, okay, you just build a new robot. That means that we won't have to think about war anymore. We won't have to question it.
How many of them will they make and send into battle? Thousands?
As many as they need. Thousands to start with. You know, if 1,000 aren't enough, they'll make a million. You know, this is definitely the future. This is what's coming. It sounds like science fiction, I know, but this is absolutely the direction that we're going. The Pentagon loves these ideas. The Pentagon loves the idea that they could fight a war and never lose a single soldier, which sounds great, except, you know, what if you're on the wrong side?
And these things turn on you. Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could be hacked. That is another fear. You know, think about how easy it is for hackers to get your credit card numbers. Well, you know, a credit card can't kill you. It might make you wish you were dead, but it can't kill you.
Every month.
These robots with a machine gun on it, somebody can hack that and tell it, just start shooting people. Just shoot people at random. And the robot would not be able to say no.
Everything you've said, David, and we're with David Wellington. His book is called The Cyclops Initiative. Everything you've said is going to happen.
Yes. Yes, it's going to happen in the lifetime of some of the people listening to this right now.
And there's nothing we can do to stop it or slow it down, I don't think. It's progress.
Well, you know, there's always a way, right? There's always a way to slow these things down. You can talk to your senator, your representative. You can write to the White House and say, please don't do this. Is that going to work? If enough people do it, absolutely. This is, you know, we're in an election year right now. You think if 10 million people in America got together and said, don't do this thing, you think Hillary Clinton, you think Donald Trump, you think anybody would say no? Yeah, they want those 10 million votes. So it's a possibility. I don't think that that's going to happen. I've been watching the public's reaction to things like the NSA surveillance revelations, things like that. People in America don't really understand technology. They don't understand the new technology and what's coming up next. And so they don't know what they should be afraid of yet.
What if they make these robots to, you know, start literally replacing humans? Not just in factories that they've been doing for years, but what if they teach them how to vote and things like that? What if they literally become part of society?
I think that's a little farther off. They're not quite smart enough yet to be doing that sort of thing, unless you let them, you know, unless you program them to do it. In that case, I think that would definitely be voter fraud. But you know, but
that never stopped them before, David.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Dead people vote, you know.
Yeah. We will get to the point where the machines do start thinking for themselves. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like. And I've read lots of science fiction stories about it where you have computers that start thinking for themselves and they're smarter than human beings. That's a ways off.
Will they have emotion? Will they cry?
If you program them to, they will. And, you know, if you program them to react to things the way a human being would, then yes, they're going to cry. And maybe they would be benevolent. Maybe they would be moral. But if you program them to not care about such things, if you program them to make hard decisions for you, then one of those hard decisions might very well be, we don't need humans anymore.
I mean, I see the day, one day, I'm not kidding you, that you'll look over at a dinner table at a restaurant and some guy will be sitting there with a robot woman. And, you don't have to buy her food. Cheap date, I guess.
That's coming sooner than we think. Definitely. This idea of, robot companions.
That's happening.
Coming sooner than we think.
So some of these companies that are in this field are going to be huge, aren't they?
Absolutely. There's going to be a ton of money to be made in this.
I wonder if there's an Apple stock out there somewhere like this, where they're so dinky, but they're going to be huge.
Well, I'm not going to give anybody stock advice. I am not the person for that.
Good.
If I was, I'd be rich. there's a company called Boston Dynamics that is doing some really cutting-edge stuff with robots. And you know, they are definitely going to be the next Apple or something. I say definitely. I can't guarantee that, obviously. And I don't recommend anybody invest without talking to a professional. But, you know, any of these companies that is building these high-end robots, they're going to get government grants. They're going to get, you know, immense amounts of public money. Billionaires are going to invest in these stocks. And yeah, those companies are going to do pretty well.
Boston Dynamics. Let's watch that company grow, huh?
Don't invest in a company just because some random author on a radio show told you to.
No.
That's advice.
I don't think it's a public company anyways, is it?
It may not be. I haven't checked.
Interesting take, though. Well, I want to take some phone calls with you next hour, but let's get back to the chimeras for just a second. What made you write that book?
It was just terrifying. The research I did was scary. And I knew I could do a compelling story about something that scary. I knew that I could, you know, just create so much suspense talking about this thing that scared me. And in fact, I did scare myself writing that book. It was, there were some nights where I couldn't sleep because of what I was looking at in my research.
These crosses between humans and animals becoming more and more prevalent, aren't they?
Yes, because they're useful. You know, these are things that, these transgenic organisms, what they're called. We talked, the last time I was on, we talked about spider goats. Spider goats is a great name. What they are, they look just like goats, but their milk contains spider silk. They have the genes of a spider in them. And so they can produce spider silk. And spider silk is stronger and more flexible pound for pound than steel.
That's true.
It is a very, very useful thing, but it's hard to harvest. It's very difficult to, you know, have a farm full of spiders making silk. Well, you can have a farm full of spider goats. So absolutely, they're useful things that you can do with this chimera technology, this, you know, transgenic technology. And some of it will save human lives. Absolutely. There are diseases right now that we will defeat, that we will just eradicate in the 21st century. Diabetes is going to get wiped out. Absolutely. They will develop a new kind of pancreas that, you know, they'll grow inside who knows what, a dolphin or a baby pig, who knows, that they can implant in your body and you won't have diabetes anymore. You know, they'll be able to grow human lungs and human hearts in animal bodies.
I've always wondered if just the rich will get that.
You know, it doesn't tend to work out that way, at least not at first. What we've seen with kidney transplants, with liver transplants, things like that, is we have actually made really smart choices about that, who gets those. Now, I'm not going to say that nobody has ever bought themselves a kidney transplant, but for the most part...
Or moved up the line for a liver or something.
Sure, absolutely. But even if you are flat broke in this country, you can get put on that list and you can get a new kidney. If you need one that badly, there's a possibility that you will survive because someone donated a kidney and you're going to be on that list. So I think, you know, yes, the rich are always going to take advantage of these situations, and they're the ones who invest in this stuff, right? So they think that they should be the ones who benefit from it. But I think that we as a people in America still believe in fair play and fairness, and I think that we will continue to put systems in place like, the organ donation list.
Mm-hmm. All right, David, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some phone calls with you as we talk about chimeras and the PsyOps initiative, drones and chimeras. We'll be back.